Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support of there is greatly appreciated. Well, it's our usual Monday episode, Brendan, but I guess before we even get into the recap of the Suns upsetting the Warriors in preseason games, I know they sat most of their guys in the second half, but we'll get into more of what happened today later on, and we'll go into the game preview after our quick thoughts here. But Ryan McDonough was fired as the general manager of the Phoenix Suns today, which really stunned both you, me, but really both of us. And I didn't really.
Everybody.
Yeah, everybody, really. Like, completely out of left field. So my first reaction to that was just really stunning. Just, I didn't really see this coming. And I don't know what to expect from the Suns anymore because at the moment, I really don't think that James Jones is at the wheel. I think Robert Sarver's at the wheel of this organization until something happens. So I really, who the hell knows what's going to happen in the point guard situation? Robert Sarver mentioned on Burns and Gambo today that that is priority number one for this team before the season opener, which is in just over a week. So a trade is 100% imminent, in my opinion. So just a lot of reactions, a lot of takeaways you can go in a lot of different directions with this, Brendan. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, shock. What if we did an episode, though, completely just about the 117-109 win? What if we just like ignored the news? How upset would everybody be? That would be pretty funny. No, I think that it was just shock. Like the way that the news came out, just a press release, it wasn't, you know, nobody got the scoop. There wasn't premeditation over the weekend of, oh, this is burbling and watch out, the Suns are gonna do something early in the week. None of that. And so just the initial like, whoa. And then I think it was kind of frustration. Why do this 9 days before the season when there's not really much you can do in the way of a backup plan? There's not a, you know, they're not going to hire a general manager between now and the start of the season. And like you said, that interview with Burns and Gambo, which people should definitely go check out. It was like 30 minutes long on the radio today. They aired it twice. Sarver said he's in no rush, quote, no rush to hire a replacement. And he's has confidence in Trevor Buckstein, who is the assistant general manager here for 9 years. He will be the primary contact for player transactions, according to the Suns press release. Jones will be elevated to kind of the day-to-day big picture role of managing the organization. And along with McDonough's dismissal, the other assistant general manager, Pat Connolly, and the director of scouting, Courtney Witt, will also be dismissed. So for all of that to happen 9 days before the year, when there's really no way to pick up those pieces, just really, really shocked me and kind of made me frustrated with the last, you know, 14 months since McDonough signed his contract extension. And yeah, it was just shocking and frustrating, I think, would be the quick summation. But we'll get way more into it, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. I guess before we even go into more details about the McDonough firing, and trust me, we'll have a lot to say about that. Let's just first talk about the game, the Warriors and the Suns. The Suns actually went into Oracle Arena and beat the Golden State Warriors 117-109. DeAndre Ayton was really impressive, as he has been out of four games so far. 18.7 rebounds, 2 assists. 2 steals, 1 block, +7 on the floor, only 27 minutes, 7-11 from the field goals. So really another impressive game for DeAndre. And if we look at his total stat line through 4 games, 20.5 points, 11.5 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, 1.8 assists on 62.5 field goal percentage. I mean, it's preseason, Brendan, so I'm not trying to get like a little too into it, but DeAndre definitely looks like the real deal, and he's proving it game after game.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say about this game because I think we both want to get into McDonough. But the one thing I did want to share with people, after Ayton continued his strong performance, the Warriors don't really have, if they're not going to go to the death lineup, which they're not going to do in the preseason, they don't really have a center that's scary. So although they're an incredible team and have a lot of talent, that is the kind of team, especially when they don't really care, that Ayton can dominate. So I don't know if it actually says as much as it seems like, but he was good again today, and it just made me think. I saw a statistic earlier in the day from Jacob Goldstein over at Nylon Calculus that in terms of wins added, DeAndre Ayton has been the best before tonight's game, but I would imagine he would be still near the top, if not at the top, players in terms of wins added in the league. Just the value he's adding per 100 possessions to the Suns is the best in the entire league in the preseason. That's pretty crazy to say about somebody who did have some question marks, especially on defense, that he's been able to be so productive on defense. He's had another block tonight. He's up to 10 in the preseason. And then from the Warriors, I was just excited because Daniel House started, and that's my guy.
Hey, yeah, for sure. And I guess really quick, I wanted to ask before we go back to the McDonough, because I know some listeners say we don't talk about him enough, and it's TJ Warren, who had a really impressive game tonight, 15 points, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks.
Hit a three
as well, and the form looked really good in 18 minutes. So another strong game from TJ. He's maintaining his efficiency. He's looking really good defensively through these first 4 games, and also a better playmaker too. So are you buying into TJ, buying into his role as coming off the bench, being a super sub in Igor's offense?
Yeah, I'm definitely buying into the willing playmaker part of all of it. I'm excited about how he just kind of picked that up seamlessly. He's been one of the guys who had that translate so smoothly, more than really anyone else on the roster, to be honest. I mean, other guys already had the skill, and so it's working well for them. I think Isaiah Cannon's actually another role of somebody who fit a lot really seamlessly into the offense that they want to run. But it just goes to show that, I mean, there was always that inkling, like, Warren is such an intelligent offensive player and has so much touch that you're like, this guy should be a better shooter. He should be a better passer. Why is that not happening? And I think shooting remains to be seen, but as far as the passing part of it goes, I think you're seeing his feel for the game just come out in a way now that he's being encouraged to pass the ball more and play that role.
I imagine you agree with this, but would you say TJ Warren has been more impressive than Josh Jackson through 4 games so far?
I think so. I mean, the highs have been probably not as high, but the lows have been much higher, right? Like, less variability, but altogether way more consistent, way more productive, and way more valuable. Yeah, I think he's impressed me quite a bit. He's probably near the top of the list, maybe right below 8 in terms of guys that I've been most excited by just doing things I wasn't expecting.
Yeah, it's really impressive so far. And I wanted, before we go into our next discussion with Ryan McDonough, I wanted to just really quickly talk about our NFL and NBA shows on Locked On Network. They go 6 teams a day, 5 days in the week for the previews. They're going to preview 30 teams, so look forward to that. We're going to be on there. So just wanted to pub that really quickly for you guys, because we'll be on there, I believe, next week to discuss the Phoenix Suns. And we record actually on the day that McDonough got fired, so we do have some more thoughts on there. So just, what do you think now, Brendan, about the preview and just anything about the Locked On Network that really surprised you so far?
Yeah, I mean, I would just add, people can get it in all the same places that they get our podcast. So Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, the Google Play Store, even Alexa. I don't think it's every show yet, but I think the national show, so the Locked On NBA show, will be on there. And some of the local shows, I don't believe our show is there. I think we're still testing it. But before we move on, I also want to tell you guys about Vivid Seats. So you heard me talk about it before. It's not quite in the prime spot for sporting events anymore because the Diamondbacks saw their season end, but we have Cardinals going on. I'm a season ticket holder. That arena or that stadium is still going crazy even when the team is not doing so well. So you want to get in there. The Suns season is obviously starting up soon. We want to be there for the Mavericks game. Evan and I will both be there. We want you guys to come enjoy as well. So the place you need to go to do that is Vivid Seats. So with Vivid Seats, you can attend any show you want to go to for a great price. It's the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price, look for seats in the section and row of your choice, and it just makes everything smoother and more affordable. Right now, Vivid Seats is giving listeners to our show an exclusive promo code for new customers who can receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. So again, you just need to go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, the name of this show, no space, or $20 off orders of $200 or more if you're a new customer. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. And again, this is for any show. It's not just for sporting events. So concerts, I know Drake's here tonight, so maybe that's not quite what you're going to do, but there's concerts coming all throughout the winter because it's cooling down. So you're going to be able to find something. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
Yeah, I'm going to use Vivid Seats throughout the year for some Cardinals games, I think, sometime soon. So yeah, make sure to use Vivid Seats. So going back into our discussion with Ryan McDonough and Brendan, I'll throw it to you. Just any more thoughts about that? I know we were texting back and forth all day about this and the group chat with Brightside of the Sun. Just any theories? What do you have in mind is why now? Because that's the big question that we mentioned at the top of the podcast. And it's one that I'm still trying to think of why, because Robert Sarver said he even told Burns and Gambo he didn't think it was a weird time to do it. So if the owners think, if he doesn't think it's a weird time to do it, then I guess it's not. But I personally think it is, and it's, I think Kevin Pelham was on Burns and Gambo as well, and he mentioned that only one time in history has a GM been fired this late in the process of an offseason. That was Ernie Grunfeld. I think it was Ernie Grunfeld with the Knicks 2004. So just there's so many takeaways you can go from this, Brent. Where would you go?
Yeah, I mean, the timing, like, look, if this was a guy who failed miserably, you know, punch James Jones in the face in the middle of a crowded room and just embarrass the franchise. Okay. Right. This is a fine time to do it. Sarver's defense for not even defense. Like, I don't want to be accusatory. There's obviously plenty of nits to pick with McDonough's tenure. We've gone over plenty of it before. I've gotten riled up about how the 2013 season did him in as far as, you know, skewing expectations a little bit. We all know that the draft has not been pleasant for him, so to say. Like, there's not a ton of track record of him nailing the draft. And so there's plenty to be upset with. But Sarver's explanation for why now is just that he said there's no good time, right? That, okay, in June you're preparing for the draft. In July you're signing free agents. Then your summer league is starting. But I would argue that every other team in the entire league that wanted to fire their general manager did so in May. And that's the normal time. That's when the right time is. That's when every other team has done it for the entire existence of the NBA. The season ends, you fire the people who you don't want to be working for you for the next NBA season. And if not then, if you were not excited about what happened, but you wanted to give him the entire offseason because you did just extend him, then August sounds like a decent time because there's nothing going on in the NBA in August. That's maybe enough time to hire a replacement or figure out what you want the structure to look like with James Jones and Trevor Buckstein. Just from a basketball perspective, it's going to be a struggle to make this work with the way that the timeline ended up happening. So it's difficult for me not to focus on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm trying to think more back on this because it's weird how Sarver mentioned in his interview with Burns and Gambo on 98.7 that in the last 6 months was one of the reasons why, and being in the West were reasons why you fired McDonough. And that's a little bit scary, don't you think? Because I think that points toward, and if you kind of read the context clues of in the tone of how he was talking, I think his patience has run thin, even though he said last year at this time about 15 months ago that he had to be patient by a fall here, and he doesn't like being patient, but he has to at this stage. And only 15 months later, it seems like he's changed his mind on that already, and he wants to make the playoffs with this roster, which isn't going to happen unless they make a drastic move. And that's just what worries me, Brent. I feel like at this stage and with how dire and really Robert Sarver saying out loud in national media, I'm getting a point guard next week, and I don't care how much it costs, really. So I'm worried a really panic trade is going to happen here soon. I hope that's not the case, but it just seems like that's the direction it's going to go because it's Robert Sarver. Like, I don't know. You've been here your whole life. I'm from Indiana. I'm an outsider, but it seems like ever since 7 seconds or less and the Colangelo sold, this has been a never ending cycle.
Yeah. I want to read, we'll talk about a lot of the other consequent reporting in our last segment, talking about kind of what happens next, but one tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski that I want to read is from shortly after he's kind of explaining in the aftermath of the firing this morning. He said, owner Robert Sarver has become even more involved in day-to-day of franchise. He already had a strong voice in many moves, including past coaching hires. James Jones is over to there. To me, you look at that and it seems like we're right back to where we were. I mean, I don't know even if it's fair to say we ever left the point where Sarver was overly involved in the franchise. The best NBA teams don't have this problem. Everybody knows the names on the good and the bad. James Dolan is a humongous reason that the Knicks can't get out of their own way and that they have to keep hiring new people who, you know, go to battle with the owner and try to do the right thing and largely have failed in the past. On the other side, you see people like Mickey Arison in Miami who hired Pat Riley and let him do what he needed to do. Same with Mark Cuban, kind of a different kind of guy that he is involved. But I think at the end of the day, he, on the basketball side of things, is willing to let the coach and the general manager do what is right to make the team good and to make the team win. That's what helps. And when you see Sarver's involvement becoming another talking point, and then you see this sticking point of the point guard trade suddenly be under the microscope, it just seems to me it jumps out as an owner who doesn't necessarily have the best perspective on the basketball side of things, getting overly involved on one particular issue and letting that control his mindset. That just screams to me as the kind of mistake that these types of owners make that holds back franchises.
If you're an opposing GM and you have an excess amount of point guards and you know the Suns are going to call you, I mean, every team around the league now, if the Suns have talked to them, especially after what happened today, they're going to possibly double their value on whoever they were trying to get, right? Because the Suns are losing leverage in this every day they go by, and now they've especially lost it.
Yeah, I really don't know what to make of what to expect from a point guard trade or just, you know, even how to gauge what they've been discussing. Like, the only thing we got was Woj talking about the franchise's desire to acquire. They just said starting caliber. I don't know what that means. I feel like we kind of know the names, but if it was such a big thing that it kind of maybe indirectly led to the firing of the general manager, then maybe it is something larger than we're guessing. And it's Sarver or James Jones are really convinced that whoever they feel like they can get on the market at the point guard position is going to make this franchise take it over to the next level. Because one of the other things that Sarver talked about quite a bit in his interview on the radio today was he talked a lot about being at the end of a rebuild. He kept saying that phrase, and he talked about, as you said before, just building a winner as opposed to, you know, just going through the motions of getting young talent and trying to make it work. And I've said it before, just kind of loosely discussing the opportunities for the Suns at the point guard spot. This team isn't a point guard away from making the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I really am worried that maybe they view Kemba Walker as that kind of guy. I know people are going to say, I mentioned Kemba Walker a lot, but I mean, at this stage in time, I think it's one of the most realistic ones, because I know we were talking about, I showed you on Friday at the game, that assistant GM for the Hornets, Buzz Peterson, was there, and their head scout, Gary Sachs. And at this point, I really don't think that's a coincidence anymore. And I'm just putting on my speculative glasses here. This is no reporting. I'm just guessing that they were in deep talks for a Kemba Walker trade, and McDonough didn't want to blow up any of his rebuild. Like, also known as Josh Jackson, also known as Mikal Bridges picks, or any of those guys, for a guy who may not commit to the team long term. Yet maybe the ownership thought that this piece could get in the playoffs with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. So that's just a guess on my part. I still feel maybe that's a guy they are targeting in this, because I think it's going to be a bigger trade than we imagine. I really do think that guy, Josh Jackson, could be gone in this deal, because they have such an excess amount of wings, and he's been the worst performing wing so far. Mikhail Bridges hasn't had that amount of time in preseason to really get a fair crack, but they trade the 2021 Miami pick for him, so I think he's going to stay around for a while. So I really
feel but like, here's the thing. Like, I agree. I think I'm ready for anything as far as who they get and how high they reach. And I like Kemba. I think he's a really good fit next to Booker. I think he's going to age better than some other guys that are as old as he is. I like him a lot. I would even pay him a max probably in free agency if that's how it ended up going. I have no qualms about getting Kemba, but we can probably move on to like what kind of things happen next more broadly and in our next segment here soon. But like, do you think, let's just imagine that the deal is something like Jackson, some one or two picks and some excess young talent. Does like, not this year, but even in 2020, what percentage of chance would you say that the Suns are a playoff team in 2020, knowing that they're going to have cap space? Sarver did mention preserving max cap space, which if they were to acquire somebody like Kemba, maybe that's just used to re-sign Kemba. Who knows how that really works? But do you feel like, where would you put the Suns' odds of making the playoffs at that point? If they add like one guy next summer and they keep Kemba, but they trade away a lot of their young guys to get him.
If Ayton and Booker take the steps that I think they can, especially Booker, I feel like that's a 65-70% chance, to be honest. Making the playoffs, I think that's a really high chance.
Yeah.
I think seeding-wise, I still think they're in the bottom half. I think at most 6 seed, in my opinion. I think that's probably their ceiling.
For that season, yeah. I mean, you think they could get higher eventually, but...
Yeah, for sure. It's all dependent on Ayton and how he develops defensively in Booker, but I really
that's
do...
What, so, yeah, that's the thing is, it's like, wouldn't you want that to be, like, that's like a pretty reasonable, but also a high-end possibility. Like, they could also just go out and get, like, Corey Joseph, who knows. If they were to get Kemba, they were to add some more talent, not give away, like, DeAndre Ayton in the process... You would want that based on how Sarver seems to be reacting to the inability to get that guy to be at like 100%. You want it to be a lock to, if they were to get the big trophy point guard, that should be it, the way that it's being treated. And that's why, that's what the disconnect is for me. It's not, they're not a Kemba Walker away from being a no-brainer good team, but to fire your general manager over it, not that you can't isolate it down to one thing. And that is what Sarver kept pointing to. He kept saying, like, you know, it's not like this guy made one mistake and I'm going to fire him, but it did happen now, and it happened at a really weird time in the calendar, and so you can't help but look at the point guard problem and isolate it to that. And to make it that big of a deal, it should be so much more impactful of a thing than it is. They're not Kemba Walker away from being great, and that's like the best option that they could get.
Yeah, maybe someone like Terry Rozier makes sense too, but they're going to be a desperate overpay for that too. I mean, Danny Ainge will swindle Robert Sarver. I mean, that would just go horribly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just going to keep being frustrated, so I don't really have a ton more to say about, you know, reacting and analyzing it. But, I mean, do you? Because otherwise, I guess we can just move on to candidates for the future and kind of what goes on.
Yeah, I guess overall, expectation-wise, just McDonough and trade, the point guard situation, just wrapping that all together. With how Sarver was talking today and firing McDonough 9 days before the season starts, I have to think a trade has to be coming this week, in my opinion. If it's not by next weekend, then I don't know what the hell is going on, because it just seems like he put the pressure on James Jones in the interview. I mean, he said that's his top priority right now, is getting a point guard, so it has to be happening here soon, I have to imagine. So, yeah, let's move on to the next discussion here about possible candidates. Brendan, who would you say? Because I think right now it's heavily leaning towards James Young just keeping the job.
Yeah, I don't have like a better answer, because I think that's what's been telegraphed. The fact that, well, I mean, quickly though, what did you think of them retaining Buckstein? That seemed interesting to me.
Hasn't Buckstein been through two regimes? Because I was looking at his profile. He made it through the Babbie era, actually. He's been around for
nine years.
So that might be just Sarver's like basketball mind kind of guy that you just kept around.
Yeah. It's just weird that he has been so particular about basketball personnel or basketball operations personnel.
And he's never heard from.
Well, yeah, like Buckstein's never heard from, but what I'm saying is like, how is he like the Sarver whisperer who survived all this time when he's fired so many other guys? That's what's weird.
Yeah. I've heard through the grapevine that he's like a cap whiz and he knows all the numbers. So I think he must be just really impressed from a front office point of view. But
do you think that what if he got promoted? What if he just became the regular GM? I don't think that's going to happen, but do you think he's any sort of candidate at all?
I don't think so. I think he's more like Peter Dinwiddie in Indiana, who I've talked to before. He's kind of just like a capologist kind of guy, just an analytics nerd. So I think that's
a lot of the teams have that kind of guy, and he's valuable in his own right. But yeah, I think it's Jones. I mean, what percent would you put it at Jones maybe having this season, at least the way I see it? I kind of feel like he'll have this season. They won't name a full-time permanent guy, and then it'll just be him next summer. What would you put the percentage like in the heading into the draft in 2019 that James Jones is the GM?
75%. I think it's that high in my opinion, because I don't think you do McDonough at this stage unless you think it really is James Jones. It's not like Elton Brand in Philadelphia because it's completely different circumstances, but they're both like around the same age. Jones is 38, Brand's 39. McDonough is actually a month younger than James Jones, which is really interesting. But I think Jones just makes a lot of sense from where the direction's heading for office people nowadays. I think they value players, former players, and getting that free agency sort of vibe with him. I think he's going to be a really good recruiter long term to bring some guys alongside Booker and Ant. At least that's what I think Robert Sarver hopes in him. So I really think that. Also, he's been around this young core all the time, and he made these decisions too of Kokoschkov, Ayton, alongside McDonough and Sarver. So I really think an outside voice too, Brendan, if they were to get someone like, let's say, Rosas from Houston or Zanuck from Utah, David Griffin, they might have differing opinions on guys like Josh Jackson, DeAndre, and Devin Booker. And I really think that if you're getting a guy from the outside, you're really saying that you're going to just completely hit the reset button again.
Yeah, you turn everything over to that guy. You can't, at that point, like you said, different opinions on players, but not only that, like we know what happens a lot of the time to coaches who are inherited by new general managers. They tend to not last long. So that's, you're spelling potentially another coaching change. Now, you don't know what Igor will look like. And I think he's, deserves due time. It's not a guarantee that he's going to go if they were to go a different direction with the general manager, but it certainly wouldn't help his cause. And so I think from that perspective, keeping Jones definitely does make sense. And like I said, I mean, I have no problem with what he's done. I think he, in the role that he's had the last year plus, has done a really, really good job. I've been super impressed by what his priorities are. He doesn't talk about outside noise. He's not a guy who concerns himself with anything but what he thinks is kind of the best way to do things inside the walls of that arena. So I really don't necessarily think he's an awful option. It's just kind of the uncertainty of, like, he's never done it before. And it's one thing to say that when you're part of a larger front office with McDonough there, with Connolly and Buckstein, who are experienced executives in the room too, but it's another thing when that person's leading all of it and survived a teardown and emerged as kind of like the favorite. It's a completely different situation when you're talking about it that way than just what he's kind of done behind the scenes over the last year or so.
It's hard to get in the mind of Robert Sarver, obviously, but do you think that hiring James Jones last year and hiring into an entire new position that wasn't existing anywhere else, and extending Ryan McDonough, kind of just like a one-year trial for McDonough, saying this is your year to prove it, and then your replacement's already on staff? Or just looking back on the hiring of James Jones, it just kind of doesn't make sense to me now why you would have McDonough in a lame duck year and then hire Jones. But it just seems like after what happened last year and extending McDonough, which looking back on now, which is kind of preposterous, it just seems like all the directions are pointing towards Sarver kind of deciding that McDonough's voice is kind of getting lost in the front office and that Jones might have been his guy. But I'm just reaching there and just looking for a different opinion. But just trying to think of what could make sense with these theories of why you might let McDonough go at this stage. And I just keep coming back to James Jones really impressing Sarver and thinking he's ready for the job.
I mean, I that was like the national go-to story for all of the past season, really. I mean, you watch like The Jump or you hear podcasts from national reporters and it's just kind of the assumption that is kind of how those things go. The owner finds a guy that they trust and then that person slowly absorbs more power. We've seen it in a variety of different situations. And I think it was easy to assume, but I didn't really believe it. I felt like, you know, because it corresponded with an extension for the guy in place, it just seemed like it didn't make a lot of sense that it would really be that way. But, you know, looking back in hindsight, I don't know what else you could possibly think. I mean, McSarver even said it today that he hired Jones because he knew that there were communication issues and the problems that were plaguing the organization in McDonough's early years. He thought that Jones would be a good guy to fix those problems. So, you know, he really seems to like him. He put him in place ahead of a, you know, make or break type of year for McDonough. But what I keep coming back to, all of that's fine. I understand the logic, but what I keep coming back to is what big grand thing could McDonough have done that he should have done that he didn't do that made him somebody who should be fired? And I mean, that's the really thing I came away from that interview wondering, because Sarver kept referencing, like, we had goals for ways to improve this summer that weren't met. Like, what the heck does that mean? There's not, you know, there's nothing obvious standing out. They got a lot better. He signed guys that he probably shouldn't have even signed to probably make Sarver happy and meet those goals. So to me, it's like, I get the test, the trial run thing for McDonough having one more year, but what thing did he not do that he was supposed to do in that one year? I mean, the team was awful, but that was an expectation.
If I had to make a guess, I truly believe, just connecting the dots here from reporting earlier in the summer from John Gambadora of Arizona Sports, when he mentioned that they were trying to get Damian Lillard, Kemba, or Terry Rozier, I think it's exactly that. I think they were trying to get an all-star caliber point guard. McDonough kept trying and trying and trying, and he wouldn't budge off the value that he wanted to get for a point guard, and Sarver just got fed up to it. And I think that little report from early in the summer from Gambo, I think that kind of reading the tea leaves there, I think that's what it was. I think they thought they were an all-star point guard away from being a consistent playoff contender, and Sarver wanted it to happen now, and McDonough wouldn't budge off his own value. But I think that's a plausible scenario.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's the closest thing to a guess that I can come up with. I think that was the only peek we got about a real guy who could have, like I was saying, Kemba's not that guy, but I think if you were to be able to get like a Damian Lillard, that maybe is like you're pretty much locked into a playoff spot for the next few seasons that you have him. So, I mean, I guess that would at least make it a reasonable problem for Sarver to have with McDonough's performance if there was an understanding that they would do their best to acquire a player of that caliber and McDonough wasn't able to get that done or wasn't willing to get that done. But I don't necessarily think that's a correct way to judge him, because those deals are really tough, and just cold calling teams with stars that you think might be disgruntled or ready to be moved isn't how those things materialize. But, you know, we don't know. We're not in there. And so maybe that was part of the grander plan. What did you think of the Kevin McHale little tidbit threw in this morning?
That's kind of scary, because wasn't he also mentioned in the coaching search as well?
Yeah, they were like talking to him, but it seemed like it was one of those like, let's have a conversation about our team so we can steal what you say kind of things.
There you go. That's where I'm getting at. Like, maybe McHale and Sarver spoke about the roster earlier in the year when they were looking for a coach and say, hey, what do you think about this guy, and then maybe they kind of bonded over that. Who knows? But that, I don't know. McHale was the GM when they traded Kevin Garnett to Boston. That's the last. I did some quick research on McHale as an executive, and that's what I came back to as his main deals.
Yeah, but you know who he coached?
I do.
James Harden.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that is right. Wow. Yeah, he and Harden did not get along at all. That was also with Dwight Howard, too, and that did not go well. So I do not like the idea of Kevin McHale from an outside point of view. And I really think I, at this point, I'd be absolutely stunned at if it's anyone other than James Jones.
Yeah, as it stands now, I think he's the clear favorite.
Really quickly, though, just hindsight. I know hindsight 2020 here and looking back here, probably not a smart idea, but a year ago, 14 months ago at this point, I believe, Kyrie Irving was almost traded to the Phoenix Suns, but it seems like they didn't want to let go of Josh Jackson. Do you think Sarver was pushing for that?
That would be an all-star point guard, right? So I think, at you know, kind of looking at what's happened since, I feel like that might have been where the tension was then, and you know, not getting that. I mean, I'm so frustrated that that deal didn't get done. So I can only imagine what the owner felt if he was on the other side of it.
Yeah, because that was after McDonough got his extension. I think that was like 6 weeks later.
It was in August. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that was the start of something like we were getting to there. Who knows? But any takeaways you wanted to mention before we end today's podcast about McDonough? Because we could go forever about this with constant theories and ideas, but we'll obviously talk about McDonough throughout the week, but anything else you want to help?
Yeah, we got to come up with something to talk about tomorrow. So we'll probably try to bring on a guest tomorrow, but no, I don't really have anything else. I do want to just shout out one more time. The Locked On NBA show, as Evan said, we just recorded our little snippet preview before this. If you like how we do things here, quick little bite-sized stuff every day, then Locked On NBA is perfect for you guys. National storylines. Every Monday, there's a national, like local stories from a national's perspective. That's how they do things every Monday. And then all throughout the rest of the week is just the news of the day, big games, etc. So subscribe there. But I just wanted to throw that in one more time before we go as we get toward the beginning of the year.
Yeah, no problem at all. Make sure you guys tune to the Locked On Network. We'll be on there, as mentioned, for the Suns preview. And make sure to tune in throughout all the Locked On Network shows. They're all really great. So stunning news today is the Suns fired Ryan McDonough, a surprising win in preseason over the Golden State Warriors in Oracle Arena. So a lot of news to digest for the Phoenix Suns. And we'll be sure to be with you throughout the week and throughout the year here on Locked On Suns.